Welcome to the Connected for Real podcast. I'm Revitin Batren Grossman, a marriage coach for women in business. And my mission is to bring God's presence into your life, into your marriage, and into your business. Let's get started. And we are live. Welcome everyone to the Connected for Real podcast. I'm Revitin Batren Grossman. And today we have a really awesome topic and a really awesome guest. So today we are talking to Jackie and we're talking about parenting and marriage and we're going to get really into it. So first thing we need to do is Jackie, introduce yourself.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm totally honored and excited to be here. So my name is Jackie Edry and I'm an author and educator and writer all around. My book, which I released 3 years ago, is called Moving Forward, Reflections on Autism, Neurodiversity, Brain Surgery, and Faith. And I have a blog as well, and I lecture, teaching all about everything neurodiversity, parenting, education. And my aim and my shlichut is to help people in the world. I am the parent of a bunch of neurodivergent kids. My oldest son is autistic. Anyone who doesn't know what neurodivergent or neurodistinct means is autism, dyslexia, ADHD, Down syndrome, and all kinds of things like that, which means neurologically different humans. Although we are all neurologically different, some are out of the range of what's considered neurotypical. So that's a little bit of the terminology. And so I am the parent of neurodivergent kids, and I am also have been working with them for years. And then 11 years ago, I had brain surgery. I had a massive tumor on my brainstem. Woke up with all my senses scrambled. Went through a very long, difficult recovery and still have many things that I deal with every day. But it gave me a lot of insights as to what neurodivergent people live with and deal with and the challenges they have, especially along the sensory perception area. So I wrote a book about it to help others. And that's been my journey for the last number of years. And I love linking up with people and talking about this stuff.
I love it. I love it. So we're not just talking about the, you know, typical issues that come up between parenting and marriage. And I just want to bring this up, you know, when you have a baby, a lot of people will say, there's a baby between us. And that's exactly how you describe parenting, right? So there's like, your marriage is now sort of evolved into two people having to have opinions, make decisions, and deal with all the different challenges and obstacles and, you know, wonderful things that kids bring with them. And so it really is about the parenting, right? You and the child. And it's also about you and your partner dealing with this child and how to really address all that stuff. So I think that it's, you know, just on that level, we're already talking about a lot. And then to add to that, when the child has anything health related, disability, you know, out of the spectrum of typical or whatever, that adds so much stress on the marriage. And absolutely, that's why I wanted to bring this conversation here, because it's really touching most homes, mm-hmm. and most marriages have to deal with something, and it's a real strain.
Sure. Absolutely.
So let's get into it. What are the first steps? I think that, you know, my sister is an audiologist and she's a parenting coach for parents of children with hearing loss or who are deaf. And one of the conversations that we have a lot is, how do you deal with the parents having to find out, oh, my kid can't hear. I have a special situation here. I need to deal with this, you know, and then all of the mind drama that comes up is like, it's not supposed to be this way. And I don't know how to deal with this. And what do I do first? And the, you know, the denial and, and one parent being on a different wavelength than the other, like, come on, let's just get into it. Let's just take action. It's like, oh, too much for me. Right. So, so let's talk about that first, you know, the first stages.
Well, first stages begin before diagnosis. The first stages begin when oftentimes one parent, sometimes both, when one of the parents notices something seems a little bit off. And sometimes it's a bit later if it's the first child, because you're not, if you haven't worked with kids or anything, then it takes a while to wake up and realize that something is going on that's different from your other, you know, peers, or not on par with the typical child developmental stages. But then you start seeing something's going on. And it's like, okay, trying to present that. Sometimes there's conflict where one partner says, no, there's nothing going on, and you're just hysterical. And the other partner says, no, and starts running. And then you go through the process of recognition and diagnosis. And sometimes, I guess the thing is that most parents, when they have kids, they sort of have a dream what they think is going to be the future of that child. And, you know, it's going to be, I don't know, whatever it may be, the parent or parental dream. When you're faced with a child that is something different, you realize you're on a completely different path than we anticipated. Now, sometimes it's something that's somewhat easy to deal with, where you think, okay, you know, all right, some people will deal, like I said, in the instance of death. Okay, they'll get a cochlear implant, they'll do speech therapy, and it will be okay, and they'll manage in the world. And then it's something that's ill, whether it may be autism or illness or any other, whatever it may be, where it looks like the challenge is going to take much longer and you don't know what the outcome is going to be. And that often affects people very, very differently. Sometimes a parent will feel disappointed, distressed, depressed, fear for that child's future. And I think the biggest fear is, are they going to be happy? And the other big fear is, who's going to take care of them if I can't, or I'm no longer here? And those are the fears that tend to driving force between the behavior of a lot of times with the parents. And they do put a strain on the marriage as well, because sometimes parents, one may be more relaxed. Sometimes there's one very goes approach it cognitively, which is, let's go do research, spend all day on Google, running and treatments and whatever it may be. And the other parent is like, nah, everything's okay, we'll leave it alone. And when you know, it causes conflict. So it's really important for parents, what I have found has been successful over my years. My oldest son is 26, so I've been at this for a while, is to, first of all, give each other permission to be different as parents, to go through whatever you need to go through, where to discuss the fears. I think my husband and I, what we did, which was most helpful, I think, is almost every single evening, no matter what happened, before we would go to bed, we would kind of have like a mini staff meeting, you know. What happened today? What did we do today? What was good? What was bad? What should we improve? What was helpful? What did we stress out on that we shouldn't? But have a mini step. What are the plans for tomorrow? What are our next goals? Short term, long term. But that open line of communication and allowing each other permission to process the information differently. And we approached things very differently for the first few years, because I knew, because I had a history and background in, and even wrote a thesis about autism before my son was diagnosed. I went right into the action mode. I knew what I was in for the minute he did a hearing test and realized he wasn't deaf, because I said either he's got a hearing loss or he's autistic. I knew. So he was, before he was three, I took him for a Barrett test. They said everything's fine. I said, okay, he's autistic. And I was already, we took him to the stage for a few years, did all kinds of things for treatment, and he still had the processing stuff. He didn't know what he was up against. He didn't know anything about autism. So it was a very different process. You have to allow for that and help each other through that situation. Because otherwise, many marriages go through a terrible time in the beginning after a kid is diagnosed. Because, like I said, the two major things parents are afraid of is the kids are never going to be happy and what's going to happen to them. And those are huge, huge fears that are very difficult to cope with.
Right.
So that's my initial suggestion.
And I think one of the biggest issues is that parents feel like they have to choose between the marriage or the child. Yeah. Because if the marriage isn't supporting this child's, you know, moving forward and getting the help he needs and blah, 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 then he's in the way and we need to get rid of him, you know, or her. But for the most part, I find this, you know, more in mothers. You know, my husband makes fun of The Simpsons. They have this magazine called The Fretful Mother Magazine, and it's all the things that could go wrong, you know? So they're making fun of like how mothers are always on the lookout for what's wrong, what's going on, what's, you know. But there is, you know, there's a natural tendency to just want to protect your kid and make sure that they get the help they need. And if you see that somebody is in the way and is not cooperating and is having a hard time managing and processing and, you know, taking longer than it should take, quote unquote, then you have this feeling that you have to choose. And I want to just put this out there and make it really clear that you never, ever have to choose. Right. And if anything, you're investing in your marriage and making sure that you're both able to work together with mm-hmm. this challenge is going to serve your child better than choosing the child over the spouse.
Absolutely.
And separating. So this is something that I really want. I'm like super clear about, because yeah. I feel like it's just too trendy to drop the husband, you know, and like, oh, it's not working out.
Depending on how challenging the child is, because if the child has very challenging behaviors or demands, a lot of times, I think there's a pretty high percentage of men that don't want to deal with it. But again, if you're working together from the beginning,
they don't
have the emotional capacity.
Exactly. If they don't want to, or they don't have the skills. They don't, right? Can you imagine going through this, then feeling helpless, and then being thrown out because you're helpless and you don't know how to figure this
out on
your own? Like, it's terrible.
Being thrown out is absolutely, I'm not talking about thrown out. I'm talking about the choice to leave. But it is absolutely not a correct choice of words that I use of don't want to, that they don't have the capacity at the time. But at times also people need to take a break and then they come back and they say, let's, you know, work together. But I think if you keep the lines of communication and the permission all along, then you don't get to that point. You know,
I want to get practical here again, just for 1 second. If you do find yourself in a position where you are going to be dealing with something this gigantic for a long period of time, it's not like a one-time thing or something, get help, get support, yourself real help, you know, have a team of people you can lean on and turn to and say, I don't know how to deal with this. This is what's going to really keep you from falling into that helplessness.
I'll take it even further and say you can't do it on your own.
Oh,
if you have children with challenges, you can't do it on your own. Not everybody needs to go to a therapist per se, but you must have a community, whether it be family or friends or a community, whether it's your synagogue or whatever your community may be, but to find a group of supportive people who can help you, also timeshare, and also know that you need to take the time as a couple to be with each other. Another thing that happens a lot of times when you have a child that needs intensive care is that one of the parents winds up spending lots and lots of time with that child and cannot work in a regular manner. And what happens is the expenses tend to go up because there's all these treatments and they're not covered properly by insurance. And one of the parents is not working in the society. Both parents have to work in most cases. And so on top of all the other stress, there oftentimes is serious financial issues. And that adds a lot more stress to the whole situation. And I think that it's a matter of readjusting priorities where you need to sit together and decide. First of all, you can only do the best that you can. And whatever it may be, You won't always be able to give your kid everything that they need, and you won't always be able to have everything that you need. And it's always a system of checks and balances to try and figure out how to help each other and help your children and keep the whole thing somewhat together and balanced, even though you have the challenges you have. And if one parent wants to do everything 100% for that child and not enough for themselves, the balance is going to be off and the other way around. So it's that readjusting all the time. Hence the end of the day, 12 o'clock at night, exhausted. How are you? You know, and that really helps get through that period, and the friends and family who are helping. And the other thing is, and this really happens a lot, is that your set of friends and community changes because not everybody's accepting, or a lot of people don't know how to react when a family is in that sort of challenge. So sometimes you lose friends or family members that are critical or things like that. You have to readjust also your set of friends and your social standing and situation, which is also stress on the marriage. And then you find yourself with a group of people that are supportive, and that's what you need, really, because if the people that are around you that are not supportive maybe weren't the kind of friendships you thought you had beforehand, But everything changes. I don't think there's a part of your life that remains untouched when you're presented with such a challenge. And there's always this readjusting.
Right. Yep. Yeah. So let's talk about neurodiversity for a second. All the labels, all of the things, sometimes it feels like it's more constraining than freeing. You know, it's like on one hand, you want to know what's going on. But on the other hand, there's, you know, it's just too trendy to be something and to have something and to find almost like an excuse for why, oh, I can't, or oh, whatever.
I wouldn't put it that way. That's not my take on it. Labels, I personally, not everybody agrees with what I have to say regarding this. Labels, I don't find helpful for me. Okay. Right. What I find, and there are a lot of people who agree with me on this, that there's two different models. Like there's a medical model, okay, which just looks with what's wrong with you, okay, and diagnose, and that's medical model. Then there's sort of a social model that's more of, oh, this person has something going on. What supports do they need? And different, not lesser. That's in neurodiversity, okay? And in neurodivergence, those are the models that they tend to use. So I'm definitely not a medical model person at all. You do need to have diagnoses because it allows you to get services and right. Funding and support and everything. So it's very important to have a diagnosis. But that being said, that diagnosis doesn't define the person. And actually, in most cases, I find it doesn't even tell you anything. Because if I take 10 autistic people and put them in the room, especially now that the spectrum has been widened a lot, I will have no idea why they all have the same diagnosis. It doesn't tell me anything about it. It's like saying, I bought a car. And then and then the person says, okay, what kind? Do you have a Jeep? Do you have a sports car? Do you have don't know anything about it. The same kind of thing. I mean, Lavdelia, it's not a human, it's not a car. But if you say a person diagnosed with autism or autistic, well, what does that mean? My son has serious communication issues, serious sensory issues. He's very friendly, but he doesn't have a lot of language and needs intensive support in many, many areas. And there's another person that is not sociable and doesn't recognize, let's say, facial interaction, but is super, super genius, knows language, very high language abilities, you know, and they have the same diagnosis. So the diagnosis right. isn't really helpful. What's helpful is to look at the person. But back to the excuse, a person's having a challenge is a person who's having a challenge. Therefore, there's no excuse. A person with ADHD is going to have problems focusing and getting organized as a general rule. Now, the ADHD is an excuse for that. It's more of a definition of it. Okay, it's causing these issues. The question is, what do you do once you have that diagnosis or understanding what supports you need? And then you can work on it and improve the situation. Person doesn't have to give themselves necessarily a break and say, well, it's because of this that I don't do anything. People can always improve themselves and their quality of life by working on it. But the challenges are absolutely very real challenges. And it just reminds me of the teachers often say about kids that are working a million times harder than any other kid. And the teacher doesn't see what's going on inside their brain and doesn't understand the challenge, sees after 5 minutes of fidgeting and not paying attention and everything. And they say, well, they're very smart and they're not getting good grades. They're not trying hard enough. They're lazy. They're making excuses. They're looking at them in a negative light. And I think that's not fair.
Right. No, so I agree with you. When I say excuses, I don't mean that it's not real. Uh-huh. I mean that it gives you permission to not try, you know?
Sometimes a person doesn't have the emotional energy to try, but you know, we all have our days that we can really work hard and try hard, and we all have our days that we just can't move ourselves, I think. But I think most people, if they're an emotionally supportive environment and therefore they don't give up, I think most people do the best they can whenever, you know, all the time. I think the best they can. Some days it's great and some days it's less functional in the sense. But I think most people do the best they can if they're being supported. And if they're not, I think it causes frustration or they give up and then that causes, you know, emotional distress, and then they can do far less and then they can kind of go down that path. But But I do think in a supportive environment, and I don't think there's any such thing either as a lazy kid or a lazy person. Everyone wants to succeed. Everyone wants to feel good. Sometimes it's just the feedback they get from their environment makes them feel that it's not even worth trying. Sometimes the parent, and this happens a lot of times with parents with the diagnosed kids, is the parents start to see the diagnosis before the child. And that's one thing I really want to give a heads up to not do. Your child's diagnosis is not, or your diagnosis, is not what defines you. It's part of you. It's part of that child. It's an entire human being, a holistic individual, and it's not the defining thing. So the autism is not before the child, rather it's the child and the autism is part of them. And it's not going to go away, but it's not necessarily bad. It's not.
Right.
It's different. It's challenging. And certainly, I think a lot of times before the person acquires skills and what they need, it's much more challenging. As time goes on, things are oftentimes get easier if the person's given the right supports.
Hey, before we continue the episode, I want to ask you something. Are you ready to get answers from God directly? Feel more in love with your husband and more supported than ever? Run the business of your dreams without having to sacrifice any other part of your life? That is exactly what my one-on-one private coaching is for, and I want to invite you, just you and me, for a free deep dive discovery call. This is a 60-minute free call where I ask you lots of questions and we extract the three main things that are holding you back. I then put together a personalized plan for you where I create a roadmap of recommendations with practical steps. The call is free and so valuable in itself, so go book yours today. Now, back to the show.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that realizing that this is the toolbox you got and some of your tools are different than other people's tools, and you're going to have to just learn to use the things you got.
Yeah. And it could be a significant advantage as well. All this stuff is not necessarily a negative. It can be a serious advantage.
I love that Rabbi David Aaron speaks about each person is given a toolbox, and in their toolbox, there's the tools that they need in order to do their job in this world. And you're sitting around going, why did he get the good tools? And I got all this weird stuff, right? And it's like, because you get to be a specialist in this thing and you're going to need these tools, right? And I want give like a heads up. If a child has a disability or a neurodiversity or something, it doesn't mean that their tools are broken.
No.
You don't open a box and say, oh, it's broken. Okay, I guess it's useless. No. There's just different tools, and the different tools are their superpower. I know somebody who's extremely sensitive, right? And is like aware of what people are thinking when they give her like an eye roll or like a weird smile or something. It's like, she's disappointed at herself for making them feel bad or whatever. And it's like, why are you so sensitive? But that sensitivity is her superpower, right? And so instead of trying to turn it off and disconnect from it, she wants to lean into it.
To learn to use it. That's all.
And it's beautiful.
Absolutely. Yeah. The I think the problem, and this happens a lot, and this also puts a lot of stress on the marriage. I'd say the things that were most difficult for us over the years raising our kids were dealing with the educational system, who tends to see them as being screwed up or lazy, or especially with the dissonance where my kids have high cognitive abilities, but they couldn't read. They had Irland syndrome, which, by the way, I have these Irland spectral filters. These are colored filters, and it's not well known, which is why I'm talking about it right now. The kids often get misdiagnosed with ADHD and dyslexia because their light brains are not processing light properly. And Irland spectral filters can completely change the way they feel and function and perform in school as well. And so like my kids were misdiagnosed with ADHD and dyslexia, two of them, and they had colored lenses and everything totally changed. But during the years before we had these colored lenses, the teachers always thought the kids were lazy. And then they come home with miserable report cards and they'd feel lousy about themselves. And then the parent, fortunately for our kids, we understood that it was a problem of the educational system, and we had lots and lots of fights with them over the years. We didn't believe what they were telling us about our kids. But many parents don't have the experience that we had. We both come from education. We both understand our diversity. And we realize the system wasn't giving the supports they need. But many, many parents will look at the kid and get angry with the kid and say, oh, you know, you're a failure, or the kids feel they're a failure. And that's also another area where you need to sort of realize how hard your kids are working and that the system is failing them and that they are not a failure. And by strengthening your children to understand that and giving them lots of tools to help them, whether it be, like I said, ear and filters and hearing devices, understanding, analyzing what their sensory issues are and trying to give them the tools they need to succeed and make their lives easier and not go down that medical route of the teacher says the child is sad and is messed up and the doctor's trying to give them Ritalin from second grade. Trust your instincts as parents. Trust each other as parents and don't believe all that stuff of all these huge industries that are trying to shape the future of your child. And I do have to say that a couple of my kids now are big. They're out of the educational system. The minute they left the educational system, they started to bloom. Because outside of the educational system, the world doesn't care if it takes you longer to do something or if you use assistive technology or if you whatever it may be you can use, just get the job done and do it well. And the intense creativity that they have, especially now when there's so much assistive technology and they pay attention to every detail of what's going on, like you said, their attention issues have become significantly advantageous to them. Whereas in school, they were punished for it. Now, one in the Army and one in journalism, and they need those skills.
Right. But, oh, I love it that you said your kid is not a failure. The system is failing them. Mm-hmm. You know, such a crazy mindset shift, like mind blown. It is so important to understand that, you know?
Yeah.
And one of the frustrations is I know someone who is in high school and she's just, you know, waiting to get out because she knows as soon as she's out of high school, she's free to be human, you know? Yeah. And right now she feels trapped because, first of all, because she's choosing not to take medication, then they think, well, then it's your fault, not ours. We don't have to assist you with anything. So it's almost like they're punishing her for choosing to lean into her own life.
I had that conversation about 5 times with 5 different kids. No, seriously, that's what they say. Your child is not getting treatment because you're not willing to medicate them. And then I found Irlin. It turns out they had Irlin. And also they had auditory processing stuff. These things are, the problem with all neurological stuff is that it's not measurable in numbers. The medical system and the educational system are only interested in things you can measure, okay? So if you can't measure it, it doesn't exist. So they don't look, if you can hear beeps on a hearing test, it doesn't mean you understand what they're saying properly, what's going on. It doesn't mean you can decipher sounds in a classroom where there's a lot of background noise. So I just got distracted. What was I saying? See, I have attention issues, especially since they messed around with my brain. So you need to give them the tools. And once you give them the tools, then they do really well. But until then, they felt miserable in school. But I think I lost the point that I was going to say.
Yeah, you were talking about background noise, and then there was a bus that went by and beeped. And I heard it, and then I was like, I got distracted too.
Yes, and kids get lost in class all the time. And then they're the non-measurable things by the, and then they don't get the supports. No one's going to tell them. But the workforce, particularly now in the world, the workforce is actually leading towards integrating people with all kinds of neurodiversity into the workforce because they realize the significant benefits. But the discussion as a parent we had with our kids, and maybe this will help somebody, some other parents with this, is to look at your kids like, I say to my kids, okay, there are 2 different things you need to choose from. What would you prefer? An old computer that can do 1 or 2 things and then it gets stuck, or the newest iPhone? Every kid that I ever met always says, I want a new iPhone. You know, well, how many things can the new iPhone do at once? A lot. Okay, but if you don't know how to operate it, what happens? I get lost. I said the same thing. That's what ADHD is, okay? You have the best iPhone, but you have 50 things going on at once. You need to learn how to drive that machine. And if you raise your kids by telling them that they have the finest equipment, but they need to get the tools to manage it. And once they do, they're going to be at an advantage in society. If you honestly believe that as parents and you don't look at them as deficient, those kids are going to believe that too. It's going to take a long time because the educational system can be telling them something else. But if both of you as parents support your children that way, you will be happy with them and you will have less conflict with them because they will understand you are supporting them and not looking at them as the problem. And they will work on getting the tools they need to develop and give them as much, like I said, they may need hearing equipment, they may need acoustic classmen, they may need ear and glasses, they may need all these other things, but they're not deficient. They've got different stuff and they've got advantageous stuff, as you said, but they need to learn to use the system. And as parents, if we look at our children that way, and they have a different shlichut and a different brain, then they're okay. And then we're also okay because we realize there's nothing wrong with them.
Right.
And they say God, before we were born, tells us up in the heavens what we're going to go through, right? And we agree to come down here. So our children also, that happened to them. And we are their parents. We were chosen to be their parents, you know. And these are things that can help us feel more positive, even when the outside world is telling us ridiculous stuff about our kids because they can't support them, whether it be budgets or training or whatever they need. They can't support them. And then they say, you know, the kid is a problem. It's the system needs to change. And we need to change as parents.
Oh, I would love it if you could change the system. Please do. Jackie, for changing the system. Let's talk about grief and God baggage because, you know, like you said, God sent me this detour of what I thought I was here to have a normal family with normal kids and blah, blah, blah. And I'm obviously using these words, you know, not as derogatory, but the way that people feel when they're, you know, signed up to this thing. And it's exhausting and it's disappointing. And there's a lot of anger at God. And there's also a lot of grief that you have to go through of all the things that you painted your life to be like, and you have to now readjust. Right. So what are some tools people can use to overcome that and really be able to really show up for their kids?
I think part of it is giving yourself permission in the beginning to realize that. And some parents will have grief and not everybody will have grief. I have to say, I didn't have grief. I think most people are shocked in the beginning. And then they're worried. Like I said, the fear and the worry. And grief is often, though, a part of the, because we didn't get what we planned. But I think in terms of God, look, I can't even take it not only as a parent, but as a person who had a huge brain tumor, and then I have a superwoman, and then now I'm disabled in a lot of ways. The same kind of thing. You know, why did this happen and all this other stuff? And my path is so different than what I intended to be. And my dreams and what I dreamed of doing, I'm never going to do. And my kid is never going to do. But I think in some ways to give yourself permission to have those feelings and talk about it. They're pain points. And we need, you know, if we deny that we have them, then it's not going to help us. We need to work through them and get out on the other side. And sometimes it takes a long time, sometimes it's less. But as a person who is definitely on the other side and all the different things, I realize that it's so much bigger than all of us. And we all do have a different purpose in life. And my kids, and if I talk about my autistic son, who, I mean, when he was young, he was really needed intensive support. I was just running after him everywhere, and he had no communication skills whatsoever. He didn't talk until he was after age 5. And even now his speech is fairly limited. And some people could get angry at God or upset, but I can tell you the other side of the coin, which was, actually went to the speech, this hotshot neurologist in New York who looked at him, he said, well, he's 4 and he's autistic. And if he hasn't talked to him by now, all these doomsday doctors, which I don't have anything good to say about it, he's never going to talk. And then I looked at us and he's like, well, you know, you can always pray, kind of like in that sort of. And so we walked out and we said that the person with the communication problems is not our son, it's the doctor, right? We're pissed. And of course we pray. But the interesting thing was that the very next morning, about 4-5 o'clock in the morning, we were sleeping and suddenly my son comes to us and then I was woken up by a voice I didn't recognize going, "Mommy, mommy, mommy." Okay? It was like, yeah. Oh. First of all, God is definitely the boss. Second of all, when you have a child that has a serious challenge, you learn to appreciate every little thing that most people don't even see, and they certainly take for granted. The fact that any of us, can open our eyes and talk and get out of the bed in the morning and eat and swallow. And this person, again, that I wasn't able to do any of those things myself for a period of time. And you see, you start to realize that every single thing is a mirror. And therefore, in a lot of ways, if you get past that original, I'm disappointed because this is what I want, realize somebody else, which is God, this divine power, has a different path for you. And that everything he does is what needs to be done and is a miracle. You learn to appreciate all those miracles all the way and readjust the path. Now, we're human and we're not perfect. And so there are days of serious work. But it's always that doing that work of realizing, right, there's beauty in this. And I can say, as my son, I would say he's the most beautiful person I've ever met. He has never, ever hurt anybody in his life. And I can't say that about it. People, as a general rule. Most of us mess up at some point. He's never intentionally hurt anybody, never. And everywhere he goes, he just wants to do good. And that's a pure soul. And because we're living next to such a pure soul, we've all had to become better people as well. And wherever he goes in the community, we were lucky we had a very supportive community. And then one thing I have to say about the Jewish community is some communities are not supportive. And if you're not one that is supportive, find a different one, because if your family's family embedded in a supportive Jewish community, it's an incredible source of strength. And our community, I mean, when he was young, I would run around him everywhere we went in the synagogue, but he became part of the community now as an adult. And even though he's not that verbal, he knows he's such a part of the community, and whatever he can say, he says, and they let him read in the Torah when it's his parasha. And the whole community cried when he did all this. So you can have a big family and everybody could see the beauty of this person, this child, as he grew up. And you can't see that in the middle. They say if you're in the middle of a nisayon, you don't understand why it happened, right? So in the beginning, it's like it's a trial, it's a nisayon. But after that, if you go with the flow, you realize it's a gift.
Yeah, just translate nisayon for people, because not everybody speaks Hebrew.
Trial.
Okay. So test. When you're in the middle of a trial,
you're not
going
to figure it out. I can say also with myself, I mean, I certainly couldn't see the good in what happened when I had my brain surgery. And I mean, I had to learn to walk, talk, do everything all over again. And a couple of years, I was really out there. But if I hadn't had all my senses scrambled, then I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today. And I wouldn't have written my book, and I wouldn't be speaking around the world, and I wouldn't be doing all these things and helping people. So at the time, I had no idea. And I could have been pissed off with God about that, because a lot of people are in that situation. You get bitter, you get frustrated. But I realized that I just don't get it. It's too big for me to understand. Right. Like every other place is Ashkacha, this is the God oversees what's going on in these things as well. You know, right. I'd like to hope that that's what's going on in the world today too, because I'm having a little trouble accepting that. but it's all part of our. We only see a very minor part of what's going on.
Yeah, I think it's really important to realize that when you are feeling angry with God, when you're feeling confused and annoyed, and what do you think you're doing, and you should have known better, you know, these are things that all of us think, like, you know, it goes through your head. And then the question is, how strong is your belief? How much have you really fortified yourself with good thoughts and with a good relationship with God and with, you know, learning the sources, whatever it is that you need to do in order to really have that solid relationship, to be able to say, you know what, God, I'm angry with you, but at least I know it's you, you know, yeah. At least I know it's coming from you. And I'm not very happy about this, but I'm willing to tell you about it because I have a relationship with you. You know, like one of the best exercises that I love is when you're angry with God, write him a letter, tell him, you know, mm-hmm. turn to him and say, I'm angry and I'm allowed to be. And I understand that
just because I'm angry doesn't make it wrong or not okay that this is what's mm-hmm. happening, but I don't understand it. And it's frustrating yeah. me. Having that conversation now leads you to say, can you give me the right skills, the right tools, the right guidance, you know, help me. Right. And then God can give you answers and be there for you because you've turned to the right place.
I say to him, not in anger, but I certainly say to him, you know, what do you want me to do with this? I mean, what? I don't understand this. Why? What am I supposed to do? And be thankful for things you do have, because a lot of things we don't realize. One thing I think that helps me every night before I go to bed, right before I fall asleep, I say, thanks for all the little things that I was able to do during the day. And I'm talking little stuff, like, you know, even if it's that I was able to get out of bed or make food or speak or whatever, or the big things as well. But even down to that little, because I know that nothing should be taken for granted as a person who's been unable to do a lot of those things. So I list a number of those things, you know, like, thank you. And then I ask for help for the rest of the stuff that we still need to work on every yeah. single day. And that does help me feel more at peace and gives me strength to keep going. And I, again, and that deep understanding that we're just clueless. I mean, as much as we think we know stuff, we just have these little brains. I mean, God is infinite. We're just these tiny things.
Yeah,
there must be
a plan.
And I didn't grow up religious, by the way. I grew up in an atheist house in America. This is all because I've just seen so many things along the way that made me realize, like, things do not happen randomly. There is a plan, God, and we are on a journey. And God keeps giving us these challenges because it's part of our journey. And we just need to keep moving forward on our journey, which is why my book's called Moving Forward, by the way, just wherever we're at. And there will, again, there are days we'll succeed in that and the days we'll fail. And it's all part of the journey. We just have to keep picking ourselves up and going forward. And I do believe that God is listening.
Yes, I love it. I love it. This is just incredible. Jackie, where can people find you? Where could they find your book? Where can they work with you?
They can find me on, I have a website. It's jackiesbooks.com. JACKISBOOKS. Without the E at the end, jackiesbooks.com. So you can find me there, and you can find me on LinkedIn, just my name, Jackie Edry, JACKIEDRY. Again, my parents wanted me to be unique, so they didn't put an E at the end of my name, which is highly unusual. And I love helping people and linking up with people. I believe that that's my mission in life. When that's why I do what I do. And I also started lecturing specifically about sensory processing and parenting and education and all those things with neurodivergent kids. So if you want, please reach out. You can find me through my website. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me on Facebook. And I'm happy to link up and speak with you.
Yeah. And all the links are going to be linked down in the show notes or in the comments. And this has been incredible. I think, you know, one of the biggest takeaways is give each other permission to react mm-hmm. the way you need to react and to go through this the way you need to go through this and to process whatever is happening on your own terms and in your own way. And when we can hold that space for each other, especially in situations where things are difficult, mm-hmm. then we're setting ourselves up for success.
Sure.
And then the second thing that I really took away from today is get help, get the coaching, get the therapy, get the support, whatever you need. And I heard once somebody said that if you have an intense child, you need an intense self-care regimen, sure. right? Mm-hmm. Because you need to up your game in order to be there for them. So definitely realize that this is a full-time self-growth process.
Absolutely.
And be willing to invest in that. And don't let yourself pretend that you can do it alone, because you're not expected to.
No, that's why there's community, and that's why there's family, and that's why there's friends, and that's why there's therapists if you need. But to find the positive people, that's really, sometimes these therapy groups and therapists, they tend to be kind of negative, looking at all the things that are wrong, and you need to find the people that are working with you that will actually look at all the things that are right. Because if you flip the switch and see that you're on a journey, and if the positive things in life, it's not something necessarily negative. and that it's going to take you someplace far, then that mindset and the people around you who have that mindset, then you empower each other. And that's right. Where the place to go, I think. That's the people you want to find to support you with all this stuff. And yes. Work together, absolutely. Just because you're getting an insurance or something about to get a certain therapy, if you feel it's not working, don't do it. And again, you may not need therapy, and but you need the support. You must find a supportive group. Sometimes parents have been down the route before you, and they're positive people. You need to hook up with them, because it will empower you. And yes. faith absolutely helps, because without that, it's really hard to get through life, I think.
I think in general,
absolutely.
Right, life without God is a very difficult empty life.
I've been there. Like I said, I came from the other side. I don't know how it can be very empty.
Thank you so much, Jackie, for being here. You are incredible. I'm so grateful I was able to get you onto my podcast. This is a
Thank
real treat.
This is likewise.
Yes. Oh, I love it. And for all you listeners, thank you so much for being here. Don't forget to stay connected for real. And we will see you next week with another amazing episode.
And that's it. Thank you for listening to the very end. I would love if you can leave a review and subscribe to the podcast. Those are things that tell the algorithm this is a good podcast, and make sure to suggest it to others. Wouldn't it be amazing if more people became more connected for real? And now take a moment and think of someone who might benefit from this episode. Can you share it with them? I am Revetzin Vatren Grossman from connectedforreal.com. Thank you so much for listening, and don't forget, you can be connected for real.